Station number 12913.
Mr. Bellows, room 7.
He'd been in the Battle of Knightsbridge, and he'd been absolutely shattered. But apparently he had been a sergeant, and he'd been court-martialed and brought down, but he should never have been sent back to an active unit. His name was Mudd, M-U-D-D. I always remember him because he was right round a twist. We came back into camp one night. We'd been out for a wander around, and he was on guard. Well, I used to have two guards together, two sentries together. One would go forward, take up a position, and the other one would be covering him and leapfrog over one another. In this case, Mr. Mudd was in front, and he challenged everything but a book. Halt! Who goes there? Of course, he got the right answer. I won't tell you what it was, but it wasn't very pleasant. And he said, "Stand or I fire." Next thing we heard was crunch as a round went up the breach. Believe you me, we soon told him who we were. So, a couple of days afterwards, there was a chap, a keep fit fanatic. He had two bags of sand on the end of a pole, and he was weightlifting. And this Mud, he was like a lathe, well, a lathe at least. You put your hand around him. He came up to him, he said to him, "What are you doing?" He said, "Well," he said, "weightlifting." "Well," he said, "that's not the way you do it." He said, "Well, you show me how to do it then." So he gets off this pole, tries to lift the sand, he couldn't even get it off the deck. And he puts it down, he turned around this man, he said, "How heavy are you?" So 12 stone. "No wonder I can't lift it," he said. "You're the wrong weight." And walked away. Looked at him, he didn't know what to make of him. Now that man, he was so far around the twist. It was unbelievable, but they kept him. But we sent him back. Then we had to get ready for our siege training, which we did. All around the Red Sea, all these upright, these oil sheikdoms, which are so much in the news these days. We landed all up around the coast, finding different places that were similar to where we were going to land in Sicily. Then we were coming back through the Red Sea. And they said, "Take it easy. You can put wind chutes out." Wind chutes were like coal scuttles. You could put them out through the portholes, and the air would hit them, and then you'd get a bit of cool air on the troop decks. And they said, "Partial blackout. Everything's safe." Then all of a sudden, panic stations. There was a submarine had got in somehow and sunk a ship in front of us. So everything had to be blacked out again. But we'd done our training, and then we embarked again for Sicily. I think the Otranto was the ship we were on. So we went as we went through the canal, there was all these blokes that had come out from England to train us. They were waving us goodbye. We waved them goodbye. Then away we went. We had a real uneventful voyage until the morning of a landing, and then it was rough. It was rough. The officers, they'd had a good time. They'd had a Christmas dinner, turkey and everything else. But we didn't do too bad. Then we all had to got orders to go to our boat stations ready to embark for the landing.
Was this the actual Sicily landing itself?
This is Sicily itself. The airborne went over, towing gliders and everything else. Matter of fact, the pilots that were towing them, mostly Americans, I believe, they were badly trained, I think would be to put it mildly. As they got near the coast, ACAC opened up and a lot of them turned away. And they just cut the gliders loose. And they landed in the sea. Never stood a chance. I mean, some of the craft coming in, run them down. It must have been murder for them. Then, of course, we knew nothing about this at the time. We didn't know what we were hitting. We were called to our boat stations, ready to embark. And each boat station, or embarkation point at least, had a name like Piccadilly, Trafalgar Square, and everything else. You knew exactly where you were going. Sorry. Leicester Square, you name it. They were all places of interest in London. Well, we embarked. Some of them down scrambling nets, some down ladders, but most of us scrambling nets, which were cargo nets slung over the side. Well, you had to get into your landing craft underneath, and they were bobbing it. One minute they were about 10 foot away from you, and the next minute they were under your feet, so you had to be very careful where you got in. If you come in at the wrong time, you could break your leg. We loaded up and pulled off. Our quartermaster sergeant, he went to get in his, and in one hand he had a case of mortar bombs, in the other he had the mail, company mail and pay. He went straight over the side. Sailor on the stern of the boat, because they've only got a crew of two, assault craft, had a boat hook, got it in his collar and pulled him aboard. He still had the mortars and the company pay in his hand. Mac Plummer died just recently. So away he goes. We're going in for the landing, and all of a sudden, my boat chonks. Just if you put a brake on. So I had signalers on there with a pram with wireless set in and goodness knows what. And I said to the coxswain, you know, what the bloody hell's the matter? He said, got something round a prop. So the other sailor, who looked after the ramp at front and had a brain gun, he came and stripped off and went over the stern to undo it. For this time we're drifting. Of course there's a bit of flak coming around. Suddenly we comes under fire. And there's shells hitting the water and the shrapnel's hissing over us. And a couple of my blokes starting to get a bit nervy, and I said, now keep still, keep your heads down. As long as you got your head down, I said, you're safe. I mean, these landing craft, they only had a thin skin and about 6 inches of cork, make them buoyant. You'd have cut them with a knife if you'd have tried. We come under. Anyway, he clears this bit of rope and we manages to scoop back and get in towards our beach. But we were darn lucky there. And as we landed, they'd already cleared the mines up through from the beach. And there's two ribbons where you had to go up through. So I gets off my trolley with the wireless set in and my signalers. And there's one signaler, he's staggering all over the place. I said, keep him between those bloody lines. He said, well, he said, this is hard work. What happens if I don't? You know, real. I said, well, if you don't, I said, this is a minefield you're going through. I said, this is the only safe way through those, up these tapes. I never see a bloke straighten up like it before in all my life. He straightened up. He pulled his guts out getting through that minefield. Then we got ashore, we got up, and there was a bit of skirmishing going on. We had a couple of Yanks there, airborne. They were on barbed wire. One of them had broke his legs broke. I'd landed on the barbed wire. And because it was darkish when we went in, and they had a different password than we did, which was ridiculous. Our password was Desert Rats, and the answer was Kill Italians. And theirs was something like OK Johnny, which sounded just like a wop. So this, as they went in, I could hear them, and one of them said, Desert Rats. And they said, OK Johnny. He said, OK Johnny. But they opened up, you see. And I shot these poor old Yanks up. Luckily, they only wounded them. They didn't kill them. And then there was one Yank we brought in. He was crying. He'd messed himself. And was he pleased to see us? He said he'd been wandering around for hours with the Italians chasing him. And he was, poor blighter was scared out of his wits. Well, we got ashore all right. And then we had to go on to Noto. Another little town. A forced march. Some of this was wet through. And, I mean, we'd taken casualties. But funny thing about war, you just don't worry about them.
Why not?
Your mind takes over. And you see someone you know is lying dead, and he's dead. If a man's wounded, there's a stretcher bearer to look after him. You've got your job to do. And some of the other, some part of your mind seems to die. You can use your best friend today and forget about him tomorrow. Until later, after the war, you'll remember them. So there, on we go. Force march, marching along. No, transport hadn't been got ashore off the transport ships with us. So I had three sailors. Their job was to communicate with the cruisers and battleships laying off so that we could have heavy fire if we needed it. So we had them with us. They were dressed like army short shirts and just a little rain sailor hats on. Anyway, we marched along, and then one of my signals collapses. He had his wireless set on his back. Goes to pick him up, had a job of lift him. Some of the things we'd had to bring it was rations, was like tins of cocoa that had a tube through the middle, and it was like a striker on the top. You struck it like a match, put a couple of holes in it, and within a minute you had boiling cocoa or oxtail soup. He'd filled his wireless up with them because you had a his wireless was supposed to have been waterproof, and he'd filled all that up with these cans. And he must have had a bit underweight knife on his back. So we had to get that lot out of him before we could carry on. But we had no opposition at NOTAM. Everybody turned out and greeted us. There was the Devons and Dorsets, they'd had a bit on our flanks, but we went through NOTO, and just outside we come under fire, shell fire, and we got pinned down. A place, it was called Monastery Hill, or Green Knoll, as it was called. Well, the Devons went in on that, and they got beat back. And then the next night we put a company in. I had about four or five signalers with me, and cable, telephone, and I had to go in with the attack and lay a cable so that we could call on support. We crawled on our guts for about a good half a mile. And I guess eventually I crawls up to the company commander, and I said, when have we got to start laying this cable then? He was in a blue funk. I forgot all about it, he said. And he was really sweating with fear. He said, you'll have to turn yourself into a rifle section. I said, these are signalers I got here. I said, not riflemen. I said, if anything happens to this lot, I said, you're in trouble. I don't care, he said. So I had to turn them into signalers, into riflemen. So we had to cache our stores, hide them under rocks, market spot. And we went into the attack. A barrage came down, our supporting barrage. Lovely barrage. We had to attack this hill, but the barrage was on that one. Wrong hill. We got so close to Jerry, we could hear him talking. Motorbikes. Deadly attack went in. It was chaotic. There was one bloke, one officer, Lieutenant Librett, brilliant, Channel Islander. His men absolutely worshipped him. One of them got wounded, and he was cut off from his platoon. And he started calling for this officer, Mr. Librett. And he answered him. Jerry must have shot this bloke, but there was a German that could speak English, and he was calling out Mr. Librett. And he walked right in onto the end of a spandau. They killed him. Well, I was laid out with my section. We'd had little bit of fun. And suddenly I saw a line of men coming through. And I said, "Now, God's sake," I said, "keep quiet, because we don't make sure that it's our blokes before. And it's not Jerry, because there was a lot of them. And there was only about five or six of us. And I had a signaler there, Jock Stunnell. He was a character. He crawls forward and he challenged them. Everything was quiet, and all of a sudden I heard somebody say, "There's a rat." Oh, I could have gone through the deck, because Jerry was a matter of yards the other side of us. And it was one of our own platoons coming in extended order to attack his position. Anyway, things got so chaotic, I had to take my men back. I couldn't afford to lose those signalers. So I had the lead, get out. So as I was leading them along, we stopped at one place. And heard something, but then kept quiet, and then carried on and come to the road. And I could see people up, some figures up, about 100 yards up. And I said to my blokes, I said, "Now look," I said, "I'm going up the road. Cover me up. If they open fire and I get it," I said, "get out." So I went up the road, but it happened to be the signal officer and the adjutant and the CO, above all people. So I called my men up then, and I gave a report, told him what was happening in there, and I mean, it was chaotic and they needed help. A company wasn't strong enough, so he sent another company in to pull them out. So this company went in. I told my men to get back with the signals. And I went to sit down. It was dark. And I was, to use the vernacular, that sort of thing, I was knackered. And I went to sit on what I thought was a rock. And a voice said, "Don't sit on him, Jim. That's an officer of the Devons. It's just a trunk." "Could you wait and sit on him?" And I jumped over the face of the moon. It took us another 2 days, I think, to capture that place. But when we did, we went back, recovered my stores. And this Captain Librette was, or Lieutenant Librette was there. I had to get signal wire tied around his foot. Because they was booby trapping the dead, so that when, if you lifted one up, there could be a telemine underneath him and a wire attached to a detonator, you'd have gone up. So you had to pull him off with a signal wire. Brilliant. Brilliant man. Then we went on again, various little skirmishes, until we came to a place called Ajira. But just before Ajira, we got to Ajira. It was nicknamed the Pyramids because it was, the hills was just like the pyramids, but Ajira itself was like a castle where the Grimm's fairy tales. Great big rock right on the top, was a village and like a castle. It looked lovely. But Jerry had that, and he could overlook us. And, well, God, we had a battle up there. We put a company out to the right to cut a road to stop Jerry escaping. We had the Devons, the Dorsets. We all had sticky positions there. Then, I think it was the next day, a signal officer sent for me. He said, I want you to take a patrol out. We'd lost the company, and I had to find them. I had three signals given me before I went, because men were suffering with what they called battle exhaustion then. If they stopped for any length of time, they just go to sleep. They were exhausted, absolutely. The MO came out. He said, here we are. He said, there's four tablets. I said, what's that for? Well, he said, if you find you can't carry on, he said, take a tablet each. I said, well, what would that do? He said, well, for 2 hours, he said, the last 2 hours, he said, you'll be able to do anything in that time, he said. You'll be like on top of the world. He said, but after that, you'll go out like a light. Oh, I said. He said, but, he said, if you get captured, he said, these must not fall into the hands of the enemy. I said, what have we got to do, throw them away? He said, no, take them. Take the lot. I said, what would that do? He said, kill you. Thought myself very nice too, but I can see myself doing that. But
what were they, Benzedrine?
Goodness knows what they were. I don't know what they were. First time I'd ever heard of anything like it. So I went through to the top of the companies, climbed right up the top, arranged it with the company commander. I was going out, and they looked for me when I came back. Went through the lines. And just as we went through the company, one signaler stripped, twisted his ankle. He wanted to carry on. I said, nope, get on back. I said, you're no good to me like this. So I'm left with two. So I've got one in front of me, one in the middle, one behind. We're a matter of about 3 or 4 yards apart. It's dark, but you can see. All of a sudden, signaler in front, he went and waved with his hand like that, go down. I signaled to the bloke behind me to go down. And we just bent our heads and went down, because your face is luminous at night if you haven't got any camouflage paint on.